Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. On our way to our conversation about the Affordable Care Act and what's about to take place in the U.S. Congress, what it will mean, I want to remind you that join us tomorrow, Wednesday morning, 7:30 to 9:30 in Annapolis for the 14th Annual Annapolis Summit at the Governor Calvert House in Annapolis. That's January 11th, tomorrow. And it's your chance to have your voice heard and ask questions of Governor Larry Hogan, Senate President Mike Miller, and House Speaker Michael Bush. And I'll be moderating there, and we welcome you to come. For ticket information, call Haley Polling at 443-524-8161. That's Haley Polling at 443-524-8161. Or email her at hpolling, one L, H-P-O-L-I-N-G, at thedailyrecord.com. But do join us, and it will be broadcast here on WEAA later that morning. The Annapolis Summit is sponsored by The Daily Record, Stevenson University, the Hopkins Center for a Livable Future, the Maryland State Education Association, Alexander and Cleaver, VPC, and WEAA. We are now joined, we're now going to have a conversation about the Affordable Care Act and what it would mean if the argument taking place now is to kill the act and then find something to replace it later. An act that, whether you agreed with all of it or not, did ensure 20 million new people in this country. And whether you thought the act didn't go far enough and we should have single payer, or whether you thought the act wasn't right at all, there'll be consequences for cutting ACA in some very severe ways. So we'll talk about what that means. Jakeisha Elliott's in the house. She is Director of Operations and Connector for the Health Access Maryland. Good to have you in the studio. Jakeisha,
yeah,
welcome.
You? Thank you.
Dr. Margaret Flowers, advisor to the Board of Physicians for a National Health Program and on the steering committee of the Maryland Healthcare is a Human Rights Campaign and a physician. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Mark. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. And Michael Cannon joins us by phone. He's the Cato Institute's Director of Health Policy Studies. And Michael Cannon, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us here at talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner. But if you want to, please join in at 410-319-8888. I'll check our Facebook pages as well during the course of this conversation. So if, in fact, what seems to be taking place is going to take place, you're going to have 20 million people who could lose health care insurance across the country right away. That's one of the arguments. You're seeing the healthcare industry itself, the insurance industry, in a panic over what to do. Some of them are already pulling out of state programs that are not really, they're saying, profitable for them, which has been a problem in this for-profit industry. They're not making enough money. So where this would take us, some people think this could be a third rail for Republicans. If they hit it, it could hurt them in the coming elections because all of a sudden the people that support them will go, what happened to my insurance? It went away. I don't have any health care insurance. Mm-hmm. Others saying it has to be gutted. So where does you think this takes us? And since Jakeisha, you've been working this for a while. Let me start with you. I'm going to go to Michael Cannon, then we'll go to Margaret Flowers.
Well, I think right now the biggest push, of course, is just to reiterate that, you know, for 2017, it's really important that people come in and try to get health insurance and see what they qualify for. You know, having a peace of mind and knowing that if you have a pre-existing condition or you may potentially get sick or get a new diagnosis, knowing that you have some type of coverage is something that we're pushing, especially with our organization and with the Maryland Health Benefit Exchange, is just pushing that, you know, just try to come in and see what you qualify for so that for the remainder of 2017, before any action takes place, you at least know you have some type of coverage or what your options are.
But do you see if this was that if the plan was gutted, that people would start losing health care insurance in Maryland? Do you think that would that happen?
I mean, anything is possible right now. You know, a lot of things are up in the air, and we're just trying to wait to see once things start rolling and the ball starts going, what's going to happen. Of course, things won't happen overnight. So, of course, that's why we're kind of pushing for people to, you know, just try to go online, see what you're qualifying for, meet with navigators out in the field and see what your options are.
So, Michael Cannon.
So the goal of healthcare reform should be to make healthcare better for everyone, to make it more affordable for everyone, to make it more secure for everyone. And this is a sort of a counterintuitive point for a lot of people, but in order to do that, Congress really needs to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. Now, that law has insured a lot of people who didn't have insurance before. I don't think it's 20 million. But we have to remember that if Congress repeals the law, for the vast majority of people who are enrolled in the health insurance exchanges, they are going to see their premiums drop and coverage is going to become more affordable for them. Now, Congress can do something for those remaining people with pre-existing conditions. It's a problem. I don't think it's a, there's this debate. Is this problem of pre-existing conditions a campfire, a bonfire, or a Chicago fire? Supporters of Obamacare say it's like a Chicago fire, but I think the evidence shows it's somewhere between a campfire and a bonfire. Congress can help with that problem. They can provide assistance to people with pre-existing conditions without disrupting this more affordable coverage that would be available for people after they repeal Obamacare, and that coverage would be more secure than Obamacare is. If you look at what's happening in Obamacare right now, coverage for people with very expensive conditions is getting worse and worse. It's actually getting less secure. Obamacare is providing increasingly less secure access to coverage for the sickest patients over time. If we get rid of Obamacare, we can offer more secure coverage to the sickest patients, and that problem of pre-existing conditions becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. I think that what Congress also needs to do, I'm not an advocate of just getting rid of Obamacare. What Congress also needs to do is reform the rest of the healthcare sector. Let people, 160 million Americans in employer-sponsored insurance, let them control the $700 billion that employers are spending on their behalf to buy health insurance. Let them sign up for more secure coverage than their employers offer, and that problem of pre-existing conditions will get even smaller and smaller and easier for us to deal with, because the rest of us will, fewer people will be lacking health insurance, and the rest of us will be saving so much money on medical care and health insurance, we'll be a wealthier society and better able to care for them.
Margaret Flowers?
Well, first off, I don't think that people need to be too panicked about this, because we're seeing that, the Republicans have been saying for years they were going to repeal Obamacare as it comes down to the wire, and there's actually dates being put out there. There's this panic when they recognize that, oh, holy cow, we can't just dump all these people, take their insurance away and expect them to vote for us in the future. So we're already seeing a number of Republicans, the Freedom Caucus in the House, and a number of senators who are backing away from that and saying, if we're going to repeal this, we actually need to have a plan. I think that there's no evidence to show that what Michael is saying would actually come to pass under what the Republicans are proposing. And what we need to recognize is that the health insurance law, the Affordable Care Act, just made the problems that we already had before the ACA existed worse. So it undermined the coverage that we had. It made it more restricted networks. Even though people could get insurance with pre-existing conditions, as we're seeing, the insurers say, well, if we can't make money in a certain area, we drop out of that area. Or they exclude major hospital centers where people with pre-existing conditions or serious health conditions could go. So this law is not working. It's not containing healthcare costs. It's not controlling premiums. Out-of-pocket costs are rising. People still can't get the care that they need under it. That was all happening beforehand. And the bottom line is that health insurance does not mean access to health care. People have health insurance. They still can't afford to get the care they need or go where they need to go. If we think about what the concept of insurance is that we were all taught, is that we all pay into this insurance, and then when we need it, it's there. That is not what our current model does in the United States. Health insurance in the United States is a for-profit venture that makes money for its investors by raising premiums as high as they can and paying for the least amount of care that they can. So if we want to fix this situation, we have to go to what is actually proven to work and works all around the world and here in our own country in the public health systems that we do have prior to them being destroyed as they are, but a form of public-funded, single-payer health insurance, everybody in, nobody out. Nobody can deny that that gives us the best cost control and the least administrative bureaucratic burden. This is an opportunity for us to say, you've tried it. This has failed. Let's move to what actually works and improve national Medicare for all.
Any thoughts?
I do feel that once people get health insurance, the biggest piece that we're noticing is the health literacy piece. I think that once people get it, they don't really know what to do afterwards. And I think that that's something that should really be a focus as well as, once I have this insurance, how do I go to my doctor? How do I pay my bill? Things of that nature, reading your summary benefits. A lot of people that come into our office, they have no idea, okay, now I have it. What am I supposed to do with it? And I think educating them as far as what they can and cannot do, what it's going to help them with, as far as the health from year to year is a big piece. And I think that that's something that hopefully with these new things that are coming down the pipeline, that that's something, you know, Congress would consider as far as education.
So, go ahead, please.
You know, Mark, I think it's interesting that the critics of Obamacare include the libertarians, conservatives who want a more market-based approach, and the single-payer advocates. Both groups agree that Obamacare is driving health insurance and health care costs higher, that it is not providing secure access to coverage. And so that's really interesting, because that really isolates the Obamacare supporters in a way. But I think that it's important to note that while I certainly disagree with the argument for single payer, I think that there's a lot that it misses. Advocates make a lot of claims about single payer that just aren't true. The reality is that single payer couldn't happen even with a Democratic Congress, even with a 60 Democrats in the Senate able to overcome a Republican filibuster. Single payer wasn't even on the table. It's much less politically viable with a Republican Congress. What is politically viable now is to repeal Obamacare and replace it with reforms that do make health care more secure, that provide access to coverage that is more secure than employer-sponsored coverage. If you look at as many problems as the so-called individual market for health insurance had before Obamacare, if you look at that market, compare it to the employer-based market, which we have because of government, the government has been favoring for 70 years, people with high-cost conditions were less likely to end up uninsured if they had coverage through the individual market than if they had coverage through the employer market, the one that government picked for all of its special tax favors. In addition, that employer market, what it really does is those tax favors separate workers from about $700 billion of their earnings every year. If you have a typical family plan through an employer, your employer is paying $13,000 toward the premium. That's actually your money. But the federal government is separating you from that money with this provision of the tax code that favors employer-sponsored insurance. And what Congress needs to be doing is reforming health insurance, the tax treatment of health insurance, in a way that gives workers control over that $13,000. So if you're making median family income of $56,000, your employer adds that $13,000 to your salary. You could put it in a health savings account tax-free, and then you could use that money to purchase insurance from any source that's more secure than what your employer offers and more economical and affordable. That will hold down health insurance premiums. That cost consciousness that consumers display will bring health care prices down and bring health care within the reach of more people who cannot afford it now.
So, Mark, I'm going to let you respond to that, but I do want to get into answer this, the health and political consequences of gutting the act now without even thinking about what takes its place. That, I think, is part of the discussion we have to have, and all of it, whether it's single payer or whether it's some other plan, whether we got what I call the Romney-Obama plan, what's going to take its place? But
yeah, I mean, Margaret. So this is an important concept that Michael has spoken to, the political reality of going to a healthcare system in the United States that's actually based on health, that's actually been proven to work. There are two realities that we face. One is the reality of the healthcare crisis. Unless we do something to solve the fundamental root causes of that crisis, we're going to continue to have that crisis. That's not going to change until we change the system. The political reality does change. We see that over and over. I've experienced that in my own work. We were told that we could not get reclassification of the internet. We organized, put it on the table, and made it happen to protect net neutrality. We were told that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a huge international agreement favored by multinational corporations all over the world, was going to, you know, was Obama's legacy. He was going to get it during his term. And we've organized and fought back and changed that political reality, made it politically toxic, and made it an election issue, and it went away. We have to do the same thing if we want real health care reform. We have to educate ourselves about what works and what doesn't work, organize and demand a real solution. What Michael's talking about doesn't make any sense to me at all, because we've been trying to regulate health insurance for a very long time. And And he's asking health insurance companies to do something that fundamentally goes against what they're actually about. They're about making as much profit as possible for their investors. And that is by charging the highest premiums hospital and paying for the least amount of care. And they work around every regulation that we make. So it's amazing to me that people who don't like, you know, waste and abuse and fraud would continue to support the most wasteful, abusive, and fraudulent healthcare system that exists in the whole world. Why aren't we moving towards what actually works? A single-payer, publicly funded health insurance plan where the bottom line is health, not profit.
So let me, before we go to the phones here, and James, you're our first caller up, and we'll come to your caller, 410-319-8888, and I will check the Facebook pages here. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. But if you look at, I just want to talk about some reality on the ground here. And as someone who, I mean, I'm saying this as someone who has employees, who pays health insurance, who's seen his premiums, our premiums skyrocket, coverage get less, being forced to be out of pocket for thousands of dollars before you can even kick in to your health insurance, all this kind of rolling out because of the health insurance policies. And I think anything that we've talked about here, or that as having the ACA or other plans have addressed that issue that I think affects all of us. But if in fact, when you, Marilyn Tavener is the chief executive officer of the American Health Insurance Plans.
The lobbying group for the health insurance companies.
Right? But what she says, if the ACA is gutted, this is an industry person. This is not a single-payer advocate or somebody else. An industry person saying that if this is gutted without a plan to replace it, that 22 million people will be left uninsured, including the 10 million people who bought individual plans on state marketplaces. So
that's just wrong.
Well, I mean,
well, it's not going to happen. The Republicans are never going to – that would be political suicide. So I don't think we have to worry about that.
I think that's wrong, too. I think both of those claims are wrong. First of all, as I said before, the vast majority of – the 10, 12 million people in the exchanges would see their premiums drop because
how do you justify their premiums would drop? I mean, there's nothing. I've read nothing in all the literature.
What Obamacare does is it taxes the young and the healthy by imposing higher premiums on them in order to reduce premiums for the sick, who are a relatively small part of the population. So for people in the exchanges, for people out of the exchanges, for the uninsured, the premiums they would face when purchasing health insurance, for the vast majority of them, are going to disappear because Obamacare's regulations and hidden taxes would no longer be packed into those premiums. The premiums would drop because they would no longer be subject to the cost of those regulations.
Let me just interrupt for a second. I mean, you can chime back in. I want the other two people to chime in as well here with this. But isn't the reality is the way Obamacare works, the ACA works, is that the healthier people who pay the insurance have to pay insurance, and that helps pay for the insurance, offsets the cost, allegedly, for insurance companies to pay for the cost for middle, lower class, and poor folk in this country who can't afford it. I mean, that's supposed to be the balancing act.
The concept of insurance.
Well, if I can finish my point, what happens is, you're right, Obamacare requires younger and healthier people to pay higher premiums, so older and sicker people can pay lower premiums. Now, that first group is the larger group, though. So when Obamacare disappears, the majority of people affected by the implicit taxes, are going to see their premiums fall. Now, you still have a problem. The sicker and older people, some of them cannot afford health insurance anymore if their premiums go up. Some of them can. Some of them are well off. But
most are not.
And they are going to require some form of assistance. You can provide assistance to them without disabling the rest of the market, driving up premiums, driving people out of the market, and encouraging them to be uninsured. I think it's also incorrect, though, to say that So it's not the case that 20 million people are going to lose their health insurance if Congress repeals Obamacare. Some might, but if they put something in place like high-risk pools or increased Medicaid flexibility, Congress can provide subsidies to the people who are truly needy, who cannot afford health insurance by themselves. But keep this in mind. If Congress eliminates the Medicaid expansion in Obamacare, states can keep every single Medicaid enrollee on the Medicaid rolls. All they have to do is go from paying maybe 10% of the cost to paying maybe 43% of the cost.
Which is huge for people who have no money.
Well, no, that's not for people. That's for states.
No, but the states, but the states don't have money as it is. I mean, look, every state's going into deficit.
Medicaid is often the biggest part of the deficit.
What you're saying, and what Sylvia Burwell, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, is saying, is that states will not want to pay that cost. And therefore, they'll cut
the
rolls. What that means is that states don't want Obamacare. States don't want to pay the cost of this coverage. That means that this law is not popular, so Congress should repeal this law.
This is interesting logic. I would like to interject at some point.
Yeah, you can. But let me, because before, when you look at what happened in this country, before this ACA, there were at least 42 million people in this country who were uninsured.
I mean, it was as high as almost 50 million in 2008. Yeah,
and so that's a huge number of people who didn't have health insurance, and those people will still not have health insurance if this is gutted, because there's no way they could afford it then, and they won't be able to afford it in the future.
And we still have about 29 million without health insurance right now.
But what's the myth?
The myth is that they can't afford it. The vast majority of the uninsured, up to 3/4 of the uninsured, economists have estimated, could afford health insurance, but did not want to purchase it because the government had done so much to drive up the cost of
that's a myth.
Jakeisha and then Margaret.
I'd love to know who those economists are.
Jakeisha, let me get to the other
Journal of Health Economics.
Jakeisha and Margaret will come back to.
Well, I think premiums have always been a concern, whether it's through your employer or you're doing it through the state exchange. It's always a concern. It's always a risk of whether they're going to go up or they're going to stay the same, or how much money is it going to be involved into putting more money into your plan. So I think, that's something that, of course, hopefully with whether the ACA is repealed or, it's going to be updated or expanded on, that's something that, of course, will have to be a big concern. I know that's something that we see consumers when they come in every day, that's what they're concerned about, is how am I going to afford to pay this? My premiums are going up. What can I do? And it goes back into the health financial literacy piece and just helping them to know what their deductibles and tax credits are, and just finding the best plan that's going to work for them and be the most affordable for them.
So much to respond to. I mean, let's look at the concept of insurance. 80% of people in the population are healthy, and 20% have significant health problems. That's a rule, 80-20 rule. The way that insurance works is that we all pay into the system, and when any one of us falls into that 20% and needs care, the money is there to pay for it. That's what a single-payer system would do. We don't have that right now with our health insurance. Basically, the health insurers compete to cover the healthiest population so that they don't have to pay out for the people that are sick. That's why they're all screaming, because they're leaving the marketplace because they actually have to pay for health care, and that's not what they're designed to do. We are already spending enough in the United States right now on health care in public dollars to provide health care coverage to every single person, a single standard. Everybody gets comprehensive health insurance. We are already paying for that. We spend twice what other nations spend on healthcare per person each year. So why are we continuing to even deal with this of having to teach people about copays and deductibles and premiums when we don't even need any of that? It's not serving our purpose. It's just making healthcare more complicated for patients, for physicians, for everybody, and it's just making a lot of money for the health insurance industry. To think that the health insurers are going to drop their prices is ludicrous. In 2000, it was like 2010 or 2011, there was a provision in the law, the new law, that said if health insurers raise their premiums by more than 10%, they have to get reviewed on why they're doing that. Guess how much every single insurance company raised their premiums by 9.99%. They got away with as much as they could without having to be reviewed for that, because they knew it was unjustified. So to think that they're actually going to drop their premium prices, to me, is just ludicrous.
So let me
buy a lot more than 9%.
Since then they have.
So let me, I'm going to open the phones for our listeners now for a moment and read a question from a listener as well. 410-319-8888. James, you're on the air. Welcome.
My name is James. Okay, when Obama started getting the Obamacare together, he asked Republicans, but they didn't want to help him. They had nothing to say about making a better implant, And Obamacare, he didn't put his name on it. They put his name on Obamacare. They want him to fail, So they let him leave him alone. They didn't want to add nothing to it. That's good, but not. That's what really happened, really. You know, they want to make him look bad. He's going out. They want him no legacy, whatnot. If they got some good, why don't they show what they have? That's all he's saying. You got some better, show it.
And I think that's the argument many people are making across the political spectrum, Democrat or Republican or independent, which is, what is the alternative? If you say there's no better there is an alternative, single payer, or is a better alternative to make ECA stronger or better, what is it? I think that's the problem of the debate going on. People want to see what the alternative is, if there is one, and what that should be.
As an opponent of Obamacare, let me say, Republicans are awful on health care. I mean, they really are. They supported Obamacare back when Mitt Romney was endorsing it and imposing it on Massachusetts. But then, so in part for partisan reasons, maybe even largely for partisan reasons, they turned against it. But there is a consistent and I say correct philosophical objection to this approach and a practical objection to this approach of Obamacare is that it doesn't work in practice. And I think 2/3 of us here agree with that. As for what Republicans should be doing, there are some Republicans who have put forward plans to replace Obamacare, and I think that there are others who have put together plans that I don't think are such a good approach. But the ones that are better, whatever your objections to Donald Trump are, and believe me, I have some. I think the approach that he has put forward is the best approach and will bring down healthcare prices and bring healthcare within the reach of the most people, which is expanding tax-free health savings accounts to allow all workers to control the $700 billion of their earnings that employers now control, and letting them use that money to buy more secure and more affordable health insurance.
So we're going to take an economy in which 50% of workers are earning $31,000 or less, and 2/3 of our population can't afford a $500 out-of-pocket cost, and we're going to give them health savings accounts. This, to me, is just absolutely ridiculous. We have a solution. We know it works. We know that if we created a single public health insurance, everybody was in it, everybody paid into it progressively, that we would have a health system that would cover every person and give them true health security. The Republican plan that I'm looking at, the American Health Care Reform Act, is only going to continue to worsen the health disparities and the wealth divide and funnel our dollars up to the rich.
So let me turn to Jakeisha, then back to the phones.
You know, I agree kind of with what everyone's been saying. It's just, you know, if you're going to repeal it and replace it, what are you going to repeal and what are you going to replace it with? You know, that's like the biggest question right now is, you know, we can all come from different sides with our own different aspects, but what is the solution? I may come up with one idea, she may have another idea, and we can all go back and forth, but at the end of the day, we need something, and what is it going to be? What's the replacement going to be? What is it going to be to help, you know, make sure that consumers have some type of health insurance, that they can take care of their health? What is it going to be?
To the phones at 410-319-8888. Jeffrey, you're on the air. Good morning, Jeffrey. You on there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
All right, thanks. It's unbelievable how the big elephant in the room it doesn't all get put in with everything. So first of all, your earlier segment, war on the drugs, that worked the way it was supposed to work, the way the white ruling class power men wanted it to work. It did exactly that. And now this guy, Michael, I'm not sure where Michael is coming from, and unless he's being paid by, you know, the Republicans or whomever. He's being paid by them. I guarantee you no one in his family or him lacks health care coverage. So the fact of the matter is the Republicans try to repeal this bill so many times, and if it was the United States of America and they were doing their jobs, they would have come forth with whatever constructive alternatives they had and put it in place and brought it to the Democrats' attention. They would have been happy to do it. But these guys they didn't want to help. They didn't want to do anything. They want to keep, you know, I guess they make their money off of the poor people, or they get some enjoyment out of keeping them down, keeping them depressed, keeping them without health care coverage. And it's just ridiculous for you to be, it seems like almost like counterproductive for you to be, to bring up a solution like the one care payer system that would work. And these guys continue to say, oh, let's repeal it. 60 sometimes to repeal it and never brought forth anything to help resolve the concern of the health care issue.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for your call. And Michael Cannon, let you jump in. Michael Cannon is one of you. He's Cato Institute's Director of Healthcare Policies, Health Policy Studies, which is a leading libertarian think tank about how our governments should work. So, I mean, that's part of the discussions. That's, you know, and
I'm not a Republican, nor do I work for Republicans, and I'm not funded by the health insurance industry. They actually like Obamacare and don't like it when people suggest that we repeal Obamacare, because Obamacare forces people to buy their products. Look, and the reason why I advocate less government involvement in healthcare is because all the stories we're hearing about how single payer works so well are just not true. If you look at the Medicare program, spends more on healthcare per senior citizen than single payer systems in other countries do, and other healthcare government run healthcare systems in other countries do. It's not saving us a lot of money. The Medicare program encourages medical errors, which are the third leading cause of death in the United States. I want to reduce the government's role in healthcare. I want to change who controls the money. Let consumers control the money. And I'm talking about low-income consumers, too. They have a lot of money that's being taken from them by the government, by the special interests, so that they can't afford health care. But also, once they start controlling that money, you're going to see some prices falling. There's an experiment in California that makes health care consumers just a little bit cost-conscious about things like hip and knee replacements and colonoscopies. You make them just a little bit cost-conscious, and all of a sudden, these hospital charges for hip and knee replacements, which were up to $60,000 in some cases, they drop by $16,000 on average.
Michael, I'm only interrupting because
we
only have a couple minutes left. I want to give the others a chance to jump in here as well.
Yeah.
We have a few minutes
left. The reality is that Medicare has been under attack since we introduced the Medicare Advantage plans, that the private plans that actually cost more and take the healthiest Medicare patients off of the books of traditional Medicare. But Medicare costs have been rising more slowly than the cost of private health insurance premiums. And the reason that Medicare struggles is because it's in a toxic system that makes no sense. Our whole system is based on making profit for investors, not on actually paying for health care. And so there's no justification for the way that our health costs are going. There is an excellent study, a very large study done by the RAND Corporation, which shows that this whole concept of skin in the game doesn't apply to healthcare, that across socioeconomic status, people are not able to determine what care is necessary versus what is unnecessary. And so when you ask them to make a financial decision about whether they get healthcare or not, they're just as likely to put off necessary care as unnecessary. And so that has bad outcomes when they put off necessary care. So what we need is a system with no financial barriers that everybody is in, that is simple, so that doctors and patients can focus on what their patients need and not on working out a million different rules from a million different plans of where you can go, what you can get, what medicine you can have, what you pay, what you don't pay. We have the most ridiculous system when we look around the world and compare our system to others. Single-payer systems do work when they're done right, and if we're all in it, we'll defend it to be right. I just want people to know, if you go out to the actions on January 15th for our revolution, demand a single-payer system. And if you're in Baltimore on January 16th, come and join us at the MLK parade for the single-payer contingent.
Very quick closing statement from you.
You know, again, we have less than about 3 weeks left for open enrollment to finish on January 31st. I just want to reiterate, you know, just to go out, see what you qualify for, meet with navigators, and just talk about, you know, what your health benefits are and what you could potentially receive. You know, our offices are always open to help with questions. So
Shakisha Elliott, Director of Operations, Connector for Healthcare Access Maryland, Dr. Margaret Flowers, on Steering Committee of Maryland Healthcare is a Human Right Campaign. Michael Cannon is Cato Institute's Director of Health Policy Studies. Thank the three of you so much. We're doing a lot more of this in the coming weeks, I'm sure, with the debate taking place in Congress. Thank you for joining
us. Thank you.
Reminding you, on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Money belongs to you. Comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MECU, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our production assistant is Nadia Ramlagan. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. At the podcast of Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends. Visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for WEAA, the home of the Big 4-0 Birthday Bash, taking place Saturday, January 28th, more at WEA.org. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care, and tomorrow we'll be in Annapolis for the Annapolis Summit, which we'll be hearing live at 10 a.m. Stay with us.